Welcome back to another episode of Better Than I Found It, the podcast all things college golf. You're listening to Mike McGraw, the men's golf coach at Baylor University. On today's episode, longtime Tulsa University coach Bill Brogdon takes us down memory lane in a career that began as a basketball player and ended in the GCAA Hall of Fame. Bill credits two coaches, one his dad, and the other former OSU golf coach Laverne Harris, with inspiring him on his coaching journey. Lots of good history in this episode. Hope you enjoy. Okay, Better Than I Found It listeners, join me in welcoming GCA Hall of Fame member and former coach at the University of Tulsa, among other places, Bill Brogdon. Welcome to the podcast today, Bill. It's a pleasure to have you on.
It's my pleasure, Mike, and great to see you again. Your hair's a little grayer, but other than that, you look the same.
Golly. You know, Bill, thank you for joining me. This has been something I've wanted to do for a while with you. We talked about it months and months ago, and now we're finally getting to do it today. But I just think it's going to be great catching up with you and letting people in college golf that follow college golf catch up with you, too, because I know you probably haven't talked to a lot of people lately in the college golf world.
It's nice to see you, Mike, and it's nice to be able to go back over some of this.
Yeah, this would be great. Well, let's talk about that. The first time we ever met, you were the golf coach at Oral Roberts University, had been so for about a year at that point. And it was the 1977 Junior Orange Bowl in Coral Gables, Florida. My first real taste of national competition for a kid who grew up playing junior tournaments in Ada and Perry and Oklahoma City. To get on a plane and go to Coral Gables, Florida was a big deal for a 17-year-old. And I played well that week. I really did. I finished in the top 10 someplace, and I certainly wasn't I probably wasn't a D1 prospect, but you sat down next to me on a plane and said, "Hello, I'm Bill Brogdon." And I knew who you were. Let's talk about that day meeting on that plane coming back from Florida.
Well, I you were a nice kid, you know, and I missed a lot of really good players over the years, and you were one of them, because I think you would have made a big difference in our program because of the type of person you are and was and is and so forth. So, and your game would have gotten better, because I think most of my guys got better over the years, and that was important to me.
Well, I remember thinking after the conversation we had, which was really great. I was excited talking to a college golf coach. The only other coach I had talked to before that was Mike Holder, because I'd caddied for him in the Cherokee Strip Pro-Am in Ponca City. So I knew who he was, and he brought his team to the country club up there to play every once in a while. But you were the second coach I ever met, enjoyed the conversation. And gosh, it is 46 years later, and we're still talking.
I like that. I'm glad.
Yeah, that's really good. Well, so I remember that week, that day, that time on the plane, and now you are now retired. But before we get into this great coaching career that you had, which I love hearing from other coaches, secrets they had, ways to build a program, all those different things. I know it's different today and things have changed a lot. But before we get into your coaching career, let's talk about your basketball career. A lot of people don't know this. You were one of the best, if not the best player in the state of North Carolina your senior year in high school basketball. Talk about that career.
Well, you know, time has gone by a long time. So, you know, the better you were when you aren't. But I had a great coach, and probably the best coach I knew, and that was my dad. My dad won numerous. He's probably known as the best high school coach in North Carolina. So I played for him basketball, and I tried a couple other sports, but football beat you up, and baseball, I couldn't see the ball. And so basketball was my thing, and we won my junior and senior year. We won state championship both years, and that was great fun. And he is where I learned kind of how to act, you know, because he never raised his voice. He was a good sized man, and he would look at you and you just go, I don't want to disappoint him. I want to be the best I can be. And he did that with almost every kid. The interesting thing too, I think, he never brought it home, which is, I don't know how you do that. He never brought up basketball at home unless I brought it up. And that was a neat deal, because if I didn't want to talk about it, we didn't talk about it. And so, you know, I barked at him one day, you know, in practice, as we always do to our coaches. We always kind of tell them kind of what we think. And I went to the showers that day too. He said, just, that's enough for you today. Get out of here. And so that teaches you lessons to how to treat people and make it work. So he was probably the best at that I'd ever seen.
You know, not very many guys get to play a sport for their dad. That's pretty amazing. But you mentioned that he didn't bring it home. You know, that was one of the things I didn't do a very good job of at Oklahoma State. When I had a tough day, you know, with the team, or a tough day, a tough finish, whatever it was, somehow or another, I brought it home and Pam had to hear about it. And I literally, when I got let go at Oklahoma State and ended up at Baylor, I was thrilled, for one, to have this opportunity. But I kind of made a promise that I would bring home as little of the job to Pam as I possibly could. She asked me yesterday, says she was asking about the team, and she said, why didn't you tell me that? I said, well, because I promised you I would not bring it home. But so I'm hoping I'm doing a better job of that. And your dad, obviously, and it was a different day and time. There probably wasn't as much pressure to have great teams as there is today and whatever. But, you know, an old school coach like your dad, it's what, 70 years later? How many years later is this? 60 years later?
Well, this was in the late 50s and early 60s.
Okay. So it's 60 to 65 years ago, and you're still gleaning lessons in life from what your dad taught you through basketball.
My mom and dad were wonderful. And the other thing is, just like you're talking about Pam, and my wife, she's put up with a lot over these years. And we just had our 59th the other day. And, you know, and that's for support. You have to have support in order to do what you do. And they, you know, just as Pam has been for you, then Ann has been the same thing with me and my two lovely daughters that are doing well in life and have husbands and grandkids and all that kind of stuff. So all that's been really good.
That's fantastic. Well, I'm glad to hear your dad was a great influence on you coaching wise. And I'm sure we're going to talk about some of the things that he influenced you on that made, you know, helped you in your coaching career later. But how did you get into golf to begin with? Because we're going to take you from being a basketball player, probably the best player in North Carolina at the time, to now being a very great Division I college golf coach. How'd you get there?
Well, you know, when I got out of college, I went to East Carolina and played basketball 4 years for them, and then went to Durham High School, and I was assistant basketball and assistant golf coach. And I spent 2 years at Durham High School, and I took notes every day on what I liked in practice and what I didn't like in practice, and how the coach responded and didn't respond. And one particular day, I was in charge of free throws. And I'm having them shoot two and move, shoot two and move. Well, the best player comes along on the team, shoots two. I'm going to shoot more, coach. No, move. And so we got in a little bit of an argument because I'm telling him to get out of the way and move on. And then the head coach comes over and goes, Bill, it's okay. Let him shoot a couple of extras. So that afternoon, I go home and I write down on a piece of paper, treat every player the same way. Well, a couple of weeks go by, you know, and he comes over to the house. And he sees my notes of treat each player the same way. And he said, Bill, you're absolutely right. But as you become a head coach, you find out it's a little harder to do that. So That was lesson probably number one for how to respond to your team. So anyway, after 2 years, I left there and decided I wanted to go. I went over to Duke University, and I asked Coach Vic Bubas, who was a head coach in basketball at Duke, and they were, you know, in the top 10, for a job. And he said, I don't have a job. And I said, well, I made $3,800 last year teaching high school, so it really doesn't make a whole lot of difference how much money you got. So he came to me that summer and said he had a graduate assistantship. Of course, I couldn't get into Duke. There was no chance of me getting into Duke. But so he let me. I was a trainer. I was a golf teacher. I was assistant basketball. And he let me do everything that it looked like I was capable of doing for a year and a half. I would sit up in the stands, and I had a phone, because back then we didn't have a cell phone. Mm-hmm. I had a phone, and I could call down to the bench, and I said, get that guy out of the lineup. He's getting beat on the backside, whatever, blah, 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 blah. So it kept me in touch with basketball, and I really – that's what I wanted to be, was a basketball coach. So anyway, I did that for about a year and a half. And he says, you know, you need to go get a master's degree. I said, well, you don't have a master's degree, being a smart ass kid, you know? Mm-hmm. And he goes, I have a master's in people. Mm. And I'm going, oh. So I go to Virginia Commonwealth and get a master's degree, and I'm a graduate assistant in basketball. I go the full year, graduate in August, and I can't find a basketball job in August. And I happened to call a former college coach. He was in Memphis. And he said, Gene Bartow just hired somebody yesterday, but we need a golf coach. And I go, oh, yeah, I need a job. I got a kid. And I got a wife. I got to make some money. So I take the job in Memphis for 10 grand, you know, so I'm making a lot of money. And I had a really good team there. And we won the conference. We won the Missouri Valley. And back then, you know, we had districts where you got selected out of the district. Well, we were over there with Florida and Wake Forest and all these teams. So when the Southeastern Conference got ready to have their conference championship, I got in the car and drove over there and spent 3 days with the selection committee to get invited to the Nationals. And we did. Mm. So we went to the Nationals that year. And then Ben Freeman was at LSU at the time, and he decided he didn't want to coach anymore. And he called me and said, would you be interested in the LSU job? I went, oh, yeah. So I take the LSU job because there's no assistants back then. So a head coach goes from head coach to head coach. And I go down there, and I decide, well, I'm at the top of the deal now. I don't need to worry about basketball anymore. But instead, I started doing the analyst on basketball radio for LSU, and loved it because it kept me in tune with basketball. And so anyway, we had some great teams at LSU. And back in those days, this is 1971. I was there from 71 to 76. So back in that time span, there was only about 20 teams that really cared about golf.
Exactly.
And we were one of them. But I never thought about, because I'm my narrow-minded, never thought about winning a national championship because we couldn't beat Florida and Buster Bishop over there in the conference. And I'm just going, you know, so I go, okay. We're not going to ever win because Florida's really good. They won the national championship and with Gary Koch and that group. And I did one thing there that everybody looked at me really crazy. And I had Buster Bishop come talk to my golf team. And nobody had ever heard of getting another coach come talk to your team. I don't care who gets them there. I just want to get there. And so he came and talked and said, you know, guys, you got a good coach. You got a good team. You got a good player. You need to listen. You need to pay attention. You need to do these things. And so I always appreciated Buster Bishop for all that. Along with Jesse Haddock. Jesse Haddock was at Wake Forest, and he won the championship in whenever the 2 years he was there, too. So, anyway, how I got to Oral was Jesse took the job at Oral Roberts. Oral Roberts wanted to have a good program. They wanted a golf program. They invited Coach Holder to come over. He turned them down. Jesse won the championship, I think, in
74-75.
Okay, 74-75. Well, he takes the ORU job in 76 for a semester. And he comes, he can't get in a golf tournament because nobody knows what Oral Roberts is. I invite him down to my tournament at LSU. He comes down and he goes, Bill, I'm not going to make it at Oral Roberts. Would you be interested? I said, could be. So I come for an interview in December because I was at LSU. I was teaching four classes a day and four classes in summertime every day. And I couldn't do the recruiting. I lost Fuzzy Zeller because I couldn't get to see him. And he was planning on coming, and he ended up going to Houston for a year and then left. But so that bothered me. So after I came for an interview, I went, Oral says, you don't have to do anything but coach. I want a good program. And you don't have to do anything but coach. My eyes lit up. I just go, wow, this would really be great. So I go back to LSU and I tell them this, and I go, and they go, I said, now, if you will put me in charge of the golf program, I was in the PGA at the time, and I go, if you put me the pro there, I'll stay. And the athletic director at the time was an old football coach. He didn't understand golf. And he goes, no, we're not going to do that. I said, okay, I'm out of here. And he said, well, who would you hire? And I said, no one. At this way you got it set up, I would not recommend anybody. So I take the Oral Roberts job. And, of course, LSU hired the guy and gave him exactly what I wanted. But that's not the point. Okay.
Well, I mean, you basically were starting Oral Roberts not from scratch, but from a pretty low level. They weren't a great golf program at the time, as I recall. And no. But I wanted, before we talk about how you built this program into a national power, what was it like working for and being around and talking to Oral Roberts himself? One of the great televangelists, one of the most famous, you know, religious men of all times. I mean, what was that like?
Mike, it was when I went for the interview, I went through all the process, and then he comes in the room. And I know who Oral Roberts is by name, wasn't necessarily a follower or any of that. And he grabbed my hand and put his arm on my shoulder, and he absolutely engulfed me. And I'm standing there just, you know, going, what's happening? And I've never had that happen since or before, where somebody just absolutely engulfed me. And I ended up playing golf with Oral at least once every 2 weeks, if not every week. I thought he was really sincere. He supported me when I needed something, My athletic director said, "We're not doing that." I said, "We'll send it up to Oral." And that afternoon, I'd play golf with him, and I'd go, "Oral, I need to have him send it up." I go, "Okay." So I tried to get the AD. I said, "Let him turn it down. You don't turn it down." So he approved almost everything I wanted for a long time. And he was a good player. He was about a 6 handicap at Southern.
I didn't know that.
He was probably 50, 60 years old at the time. And loved to golf and loved to have the college players play with him because he liked to play with good players. Some of the players couldn't play with him because their language was a little shaky. But Joey Rassett was absolutely the best. He could handle Oral and could play golf, and Oral loved every minute of it. So I felt very fondly of him and felt he was very sincere in what he was doing.
Well, he certainly made an impact in the world of faith, and obviously made an impact on your golf program because he gave you the resources you needed to be successful. But let's talk about that. Within a few years, you already built one of the best golf programs in the country, without question. We're going to talk about the 1981 NCAA championship, but I'm just going to name some players here. Jim Kane, Brian Norton, Billy Glasson, Joey Rassett. I mean, those are all American golfers who went on to play professional golf, and they were kind of all on the team at the same time. How did you build that program from scratch?
Well, Jesse brought a kid with him that had been the number one ranked player in California the year before, and he went to Wake Forest with Jesse, and then Jesse brought him with him. And I asked him, I said, "Who's the best player to recruit next year?" And he said, "Joey Rassett, by far." And so I went and spent days and months and whatever chasing Joey Rassett. And Joey Rassett decided to come to Oral Roberts. And Joey Rassett, on the way over, said, "I've got a friend that's a pretty good player, and I'm going to bring him with me. Is that okay?" Jim Kane.
Mm-hmm.
So Jim Kane comes that summer before, because it's not like today where you recruit 3 years in advance. If you recruited in August before they came to school in September, then you were doing good. So I go to Laverne Harris's golf camp, and Laverne goes, and I got to be good friends with Laverne. I really respected and learned probably more from him than any other guy. And he goes, "I got a kid down here that's pretty good, and I don't have room for him." Brian Norton. Followed him for the next 2 weeks, 3 weeks, and he never came to visit, just showed up for school.
Mm.
And so now I have Rassett, Kane, and Norton, and plus Mark Tinder, which was the year the guy that came before was Rassett, I mean, that came with Jesse. So my whole attitude changes. And I'd say it was Joey Rassett. Joey Rassett today says it was me, but Joey Rassett came to school to win a national championship. And I'm going, you know, in the back of my mind, my little pea mind, that I couldn't win at LSU. How am I going to win here?
Mm-hmm.
So, but I went, okay, we're going for this. And the first year of the NCAA, we finished sixth in the NCAA, and Oklahoma State beats us 25 shots. And I told him, I said, "Okay, here's the gauge. It's 70 miles from here. This is what we got to compete with in order to win." So they go, "Okay." I said, "Okay, now we got a gauge, 25 shots." The next year, we finished sixth in the NCAA, and with 15 shots. I said, "Okay, we're making progress. We're making progress." We get Glasson to come the next year. He was a year later. The next year, we finished third. We got beat by 5 shots.
You guys are making progress.
We are making progress, and they are working, and they are the most competitive guys I'd ever been around. They were great players. They were focused in what they wanted, and they worked at it every day. It was a great treat. And then the next year, Oklahoma State didn't beat us one time. I said, okay, guys, we're there. Rassett wins all four tournaments in the fall, averages 68. And he wins the first tournament in Mexico in the spring. And we didn't win the nationals. We all get together, still get together. We got together this past June. And that's their biggest regret, is the fact that we didn't win the national championship.
In 1981.
In 81.
Yeah.
We should have won in 80. We should have won in 80, in 80 at Ohio State. We blame it on the weather. We blame it on the pairings. We blame it on all that other stuff. But that was our best year to win it because we weren't supposed to win it. We were ranked number one in 81 in going in there. So we were supposed to win. And sometimes that's hard to do. And we played at Stanford.
It's hard to do, but you also had Brigham Young that had Rick Fair, Richard Zokel, and Keith Clearwater, all guys who ended up winning on the PGA Tour. I mean, later, that was a great team they had.
Carl Tucker was a good friend of mine too, and I didn't realize these guys were so much older than me. You know, I just because they've all passed away and I'm still hanging on. But that was the memory was really great. That those years were unbelievable. I'm not sure they're not. That's not one of the best 100 teams in the. Ever, because they were just unbelievable.
Well, all those guys played professional golf that you just mentioned, and all of them played at a high level. And obviously to have challenged and then beaten Mike Holder's teams in some of his heydays, I mean, that had to be a great team, because I know he had Bob Tway on the team. He had some great players on that team. But what stands out in the memory of that week in 1981? What's the biggest memory you have?
I don't know. I think we. I don't know that I have a memory other than not winning.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we hit some bad shots down towards the end, and then we hit some really great shots down towards the end, and. It was just the love and the care that we had for each player. And it was a tough day not succeeding, because we had strived so hard and worked so hard for it. And that was the hardest part.
Well, it must have meant something to you if you guys are still meeting today, you know, 40 years later. Pretty amazing.
The guys are really great. They contributed a lot to me, and say I was good for them and at the time, and you know, and that's really comforting to me. And they were the main thing.
So you spent several more years at Oral Roberts after that 1981 great championship run that you guys had, but 1986 you ended up going to University of Tulsa. And you coached there literally for the rest of your career. So that was a long run.
30 years.
Yeah, that's a great run. And you know, I coached a lot of college golf during that time, but I also was a high school coach during that time when you were the coach. So I knew and watched your program closely. You had several All-Americans, but three that stand out to me, that Martin Moritz, who I think was just a fabulous player, Michael Boyd, a Tulsa kid that was kind of undersized, just kind of almost always overachieved. Michael just played beautifully. And then yep. David Ingles, who is coaching at Northwestern now, who I just think he's one of the great college golf coaches today. So talk about those guys. What made them special? And, you know, what were some of their great qualities?
Michael Boyd was quirky. His swing was quirky. And he hadn't really done a whole lot, but then he won the Rolex. And right, I'd signed him, and then he wins the Rolex. And he comes to school, and he goes, "Coach, I'm going to make this putt." He's standing over a 6-foot putt, and he goes in practice, and he goes, "I'm going to make it in the right center." I said, "Okay." He said, "I'm going to make this one in the center. And then I'm going to make this one in the left center." And I'm going, "Do that again. Right, left center." You know, he does it again. He was a great putter, but he never looked at the golf ball. It was crazy. His technique, he would be looking at the hole. He'd take the putter back. And by the time he hit the ball, his head came back to the ball together. He was a great putter. And his attitude was always so good.
Mm-hmm.
That was the best part of Michael Boyd. I left him home one trip because his attitude got bad. And I had kind of the point system back then. And everybody goes, "What's the point system?" And I go, you. And I skipped over him. And he goes, "What about me?" And I go, "You're not going." His mother, his daddy, his sports psychologist, his high school coach, all called me up and wanted to know what the heck was going on. And I'm going, "Well, he's not going." His granddaddy called me. This was great. His granddaddy called me, and he goes, "Bill, that boy has never been told no in his life. You are doing a great job. Keep up the good work," and hangs up. So I got it by him. So anyway, it was like great. So anyway, Michael was good. He was a great guy, and he spent 12 years on the mini tours before he made the regular tour. And I congratulate him every day. I saw him about 3 weeks ago. Guys got back together from the team there, played together, went and watched them play beautifully. Martin Maritz was one of those. And Martin was, if not the best looking player I had seen in 20 years.
Great size too, big kid.
You know, he's an Ernie Els group. He's from South Africa and whatever. And he lives here in Tulsa now. And he's just really a wonderful kid and became a really, really, really good player. David Ingles. I went over to Scotland, and I went over to, where did I go? I went to Sweden to European Boys 1 year, and I run into David Ingles. He's the only kid over there that can spell, you know, university. So I said, "I'll take you." And he shot like 78, 68. But the week or two before he comes to school, he wins the British Boys.
Hmm.
And he did not stop from there on. He was the best putter, the best wedge player I'd ever seen. He wasn't long, but he drove it in the fairway, and he was the best wedge player I ever saw. So I loved him. I mean, I loved all three of those, but David was really played every day. And I couldn't get players to play every day. They play 1 out of 3 days or 2 out of 3 days. But David played every day well. And I knew he would be a good coach because I called Pat Goss and I said, "Pat, I would hire him tomorrow if TU would let me." And they wouldn't let me at the time. He said, "You would hire him?" I said, "Absolutely, I'd hire him in an instant." And Pat says, "Well, I'm gonna take him." And you can see what he's done since then.
Yeah, the rest is history. Pat Goss is a great coach at Northwestern, but to take your advice on what you thought was going to be a really good coach, I know Pat is thankful to this day that you did that. I look at David Ingles and I think that is what a college golf coach should be. He's not only a great player, he's got a great demeanor about himself. He's always calm on the golf course. He's got a great sense of humor. I think he's everything a college golf coach should be, honestly.
Well, he was one of my favorites.
Yeah, he's a good one. Your time at Tulsa, you had a lot of different successes, obviously, but one of them that stands out for me is because I was coaching at Oklahoma State at the time. We played the regional at Rich Harvest Farms, and at the time, Rich Harvest was it was brutal. They've softened it since, but it was brutal. And you did something that I think is really hard to do. You won a regional title. That's hard enough to do. But you did it with four Oklahoma kids, Mitch Comia, Sam Corby, Brett Myers, and Ryan Henry, all Oklahoma kids. And you had Nick Geiger, who was not an Oklahoma kid, but he was a great player. My gosh, that must have been a great source of pride for you to win with Oklahoma kids.
Well, it was an interesting group because nobody really wanted them. I watched them and I needed some players at that time. And I took a chance and the first year, and they're all academic All-Americans. And they're all in business here in town. Oil and gas bankers, or Sam Corby is a doctor. So they're very, I said, you're going to be successful in life. There's no question. And after the first year, we were ranked 90th. And I brought them in and I said, wait a minute, we're not going to have this. I'm not used to being 90th, and we're not going to be 90th. And I said, I'm going to push you and I'm going to play you every day for the next 3 years. And I played them every day for the next 3 years. And I threw Nick in there because Nick was a couple of years behind him. And it was, excuse me, it was great. The last year, the funny thing is, the last year, I said, now you guys, I know, are not going to practice as hard as I want you to practice. But if you will work on your short game and you'll work on your driver, I will leave you alone. So I left them alone.
Mm-hmm. That's good coaching.
I know it. You know, and they would go spin. I said, you need to drive the ball straight. None of them were long. I said, but if you're driving the fairway and get so you can chip and putt, you're going to be great.
Well, that team got it done that year. That was pretty amazing. And by the way, Sam Corby was, I was his first instructor at Kicking Bird Golf Course when he was a little itty bitty boy. He wasn't always as tall as he was in college. I got to tell you, he was a little.
I know that.
But
he always wore that bucket hat.
He always wore the bucket hat.
Looked like a little bird walking around there.
Well, something else about that 2007 team that was amazing was Nick Geiger at the Maxwell. So the Maxwell at Dornick Hills in Ardmore. Nick played great that week. One of my players, Brian Posey, played beautiful. They both had a great week, and they were tied. And so we were going to have this playoff, and it was going to be on number 18 at Dornick Hills. And so there was a natural amphitheater behind the green full of probably 100
fans. Oklahoma State players.
Yeah, Oklahoma State players. Yeah, exactly. And also fans. So there was about 100 people behind that green for sure. And so – you tell it as you remember it. I know how I remember it. I was with Ryan.
I was back there with Nick. And this to me is a great story. And I always have passed this story on because we go back for the playoff. Your boy, Posey, hits it in the 11th fairway. And I see Nick line up behind the ball. And the biggest smile I've ever seen comes over his face.
I haven't heard this.
And I'm just going, he is in a great frame of mind. So he hits it down the middle. And I'm walking down the fairway with him. And I'm going, tell me about the smile. And he goes, Coach, this is why we practice. And I said, you're absolutely right. Well, Posey hits first from 11, and you can't see the green. You remember. You
Oh, yeah.
can't see the surface of the green, and he hits it on the green. We don't know whether – and, you know, all you Oklahoma State people went nuts and whatever else. I said, Nick, he could just be on the green. You know how those guys are up there. They just – they go – they're going to clap for whatever. I said, so just aim at it and hit it right at it. Two hops in. We can't see it go in. And it's our, you know, our teammates come running down the hill, which was the greatest feeling of all time.
Yeah, I remember that. And Ryan looked at me, Ryan Posey looked at me and said, his ball just went in, didn't it? And I said, yeah, it had to have gone in with that reaction. And he smiled and he said, well, I can't do much better than I did. Because he
That's
hit it
right.
in about a foot and a half from the hole.
Oh, did he really?
Yeah, it was a foot and a half. It was.
We never, you know, we never saw his ball. And so, I mean, it was just like, wow. But the smile, and that's what I always tried to pass on to players. Smile while you're playing. You know, be able to feel comfortable playing and enjoy what you're doing. And, you know, you can get mad, but don't let it last. And that's what happens the most time. It lasts way too long.
Way too long. Yeah, you talk to players through the years about, you know, a player can get upset with a golf shot, but he can't carry it to the next shot, or it's ineffective.
It gets contagious then.
It is definitely contagious. So anyway, I had not heard that story about the smile from Nick Geiger. I just saw his smile after the ball went in the hole. That's the only smile I saw. But good story. Thank you for that. So in your career, you coached until 2016 when you retired, and disappointingly, the president of the university decided to drop men's golf at Tulsa. I know you were part of a group that tried to resurrect it and get it to come back, but that must have been disappointing for you, having given so much of your life to that program.
It was, Mike. I was retiring anyway, but to see something that I worked so hard for 30 years to get it to where it was reputable, and to just do away with it. I don't know why. I didn't understand why. I asked him, I says, right when they were getting ready to do it, I asked him, I says, which was the last team to play for a national championship? It was a golf program.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't all these other programs. And I'm going, you guys aren't making any sense. And it happened anyway. And I don't know whether they'll get it back one day or not. I'm kind of removed from it. So I don't know. Like I said, I was going to talk to the president, and he happened to get ill and pass away. And he was the guy that could have given me an answer. And I don't know whether it would have satisfied me any at all, but he would have been the one who made the decision.
Well, I know that must have been disappointing. I want it to come back. I want college golf to continue to thrive. I don't want to see any programs dropped at all. So hopefully one day it will be back. So you've got a perspective well over 40 years all total, I think, of coaching, counting all the other schools where you worked. What was the biggest change you saw for the better from beginning to end? I know there were a lot of changes you liked, but what was the biggest and best change?
There's a lot more players today. There's a lot more programs today. The fact that schools are beginning to spend money for golf, which is they didn't do back when I started. I mean, it was like a also ran or whatever, and now they're beginning to spend some money to do it right. The fact that, you know, the guys are getting into the Open and the Masters or whatever. You know, those are things we tried to do a long time ago, and we couldn't get it done. You know, I never, you know, I always harp on this, but I never liked the match play. You know, it's wonderful. I'm sure everybody's happy and it's going great. I would like to see college golf go to counting all five players every tournament, every day, instead of four here, four there. I always wanted the best teams to win. I want to give the best teams an advantage. And that's just the way I was. And if we had the best team, fine. If we didn't, then we got to get better. That's what Holder used to tell me all the time. Just get better. And I'm going, I'm trying.
Well, by the way, that's one area where you and Mike definitely agreed. He wanted all five scores to count. He didn't want to toss out any scores. And
yeah, we didn't agree to that when it came in. I don't even remember when it came in, but when it came in, that was one of the times I agreed with him. One of the few times I agreed with him was on that. And because he had a phenomenal career. I mean, he did an absolute – I don't have to go over that. But he was total Mike Holder, Oklahoma State.
Oh, yeah. There was no doubt about it. But I always remembered that because that was one – you know, you guys were competing, obviously, for – sort of the same territory, you know, right there in the state of Oklahoma. So it was never going to get too close to each other, I wouldn't think. But I know that he agreed with you there. He wanted all five scores to count. And you know what? I was always a medal match guy. I would like to have had the national championship. If you're going to go to match play, then the 71 beats the 72. And there's a lot of reasons that I think that. But one of the reasons that I like it, like the idea of it, is that all five matches would get to number 18.
Right.
So my 72 beats your 73, but if we're the three men, that means the fans and families from the first two groups are already there on 18 green waiting. And you get kind of a big group there at 18. Anyway, but I have not been listened to on that one.
I wasn't listened to either, but.
Okay, let's talk about advice then. You said your dad may have been the best coach you ever had. So this advice may come from your dad. I don't know. But what's the best piece of advice you ever received from another coach? And so if it's your dad, that's fine. But if it was an opposing coach, what would that advice be?
Well, just like I said, Mike Holder gave me the just get better.
Mm-hmm.
Anytime we had a discussion, just get better. I mean, when he had the tee times, he wanted to do this, he wanted to do that, get better. You know, like I said, Laburn, I played a lot of golf with Laburn Harris. And he had arthritis, and but I learned so much from him every day. He was the cheapest guy you'd ever met. He'd drive around the block for, you know, 6 weeks to get save a penny's worth on gas. But to come up with one piece of advice, I don't know that I could do that because I had a lot of help. And I had a lot of help from successful golf coaches. I was young. And I started when I was 26, and I went to the guys that were the best. You know, like George Hannon at Texas. I'd ask a couple of coaches, I said, would he sit down with me and tell me what he does and how he does what he does? They go, he won't talk to you. And I'm going, I'm gonna give him a chance to tell me no.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked him, and we were in Mexico at the time, and we sat down and ate a couple of tacos, and we just sit there and just chit-chatted for about an hour and a half. And that was just so enlightening to me to form what I believed, along with my dad and Laburn and George. And when I get back home, after meeting with George in Mexico, he writes me a 2-page handwritten good players hit enough club bad players say they mishit it. And you go, wow, how basic is that? But how true is that? So the advice, I would say, came from him. He gave me about 10 things that just formed how I believe, started believing, you know, along with Joey Rassett telling me that, Coach, we're going to win a national championship. And I used to sit at my desk at the first meeting every year, and I would go, guys, you see that banner up in the back behind me back here? Coach, we don't see anything. I said, well, keep looking. It says national championship. That's what we're playing for every year. I mean, and three-fourths of the time we didn't have a chance, but if I could get them to believe and we were going in the same direction, we could be as good as we could be. And that was the best we could do.
I like the fact you said that, because it's not so much being the best or, you know, being the very best. It's so much more about being the best you can be. It really is. And right. So even though you knew some of your guys probably didn't have a chance to win that title, at least they got to be better than they were. And that's great going. So, well, wonderful. Well, listen, before we finish, I want to ask you another question. And that is, are you playing golf these days?
Well, Mike, I'm not. I've got a little back issue that has kept me out for the last, since January. Mm-hmm. And I've got to make a decision here on what to do with it. Because I it's hard to walk a long distance. It's hard to stand up. You know, sitting here, I have no pain. I can lay down at night and I can sleep and I have no pain. So it confuses me. How can I get up to walk and I have pain? So, you know, they all want to do surgery, and I've not heard many happy stories with back surgeries. Hip surgery is okay. Shoulder surgery is okay. Back surgery just don't get that okay. And I tried to talk Mike Holder out of it one time when he had it done. And, you know, he did, and I'm sure he's fine, and that's great. And I'm struggling with it, but I'm gonna get back to it. I'm gonna be back, and eventually, somehow, somewhere. One of my guys called the other day and he said, Coach, don't forget you're a competitor. And that just shook me.
Mm.
Because I kind of got to acting like I wasn't a competitor. And I've kind of really gotten my mind squared away a little bit better now. So, because I was feeling sorry for myself and all that garbage that you do.
Well, how about that? One of your former players coached you up right there.
Absolutely. You know what else I do that you told me?
What's that?
Can you even guess one thing you told me probably 25 years ago?
I think I told you, if you do push-ups and sit-ups every day, you'll never be too far out of shape. Something like that.
I did my 25 push-ups this morning.
Did you really?
Absolutely. Well, every day.
Every I'm day, coaching Mike. You. I'm coaching
Absolutely.
You.
Absolutely.
Perfect. Well, Bill, gosh, it's been fun catching up with you today. It's been a long time since we've seen each other. I hope you get back out on the golf course. And thank you for these memories. This was a great, great conversation.
It was great for me, and it's great to see you. And you're doing a great job. And just keep it up, and I know you will.
Well, thank you, Bill. Have a good week. We'll see you.
Thanks, Mike.